We begin with a very expensive drone shot above the woods. It's a dark night, and a dark road cuts through the forest like a meandering river. The bright lights of a Rover P10, or whatever it is you used to drive, pushes along between the dense forest's winding road. We cut down and we see a youngish Alexei Sales steering his flashy yet unreliable machine through the night. His face is contorted in angry recounting of the meeting he is speeding away from and frustrated realization of all the things he should have said. He is on his way back from dinner with his manager about his upcoming tour. But why the fuck did his manager insist on dining at the obese mallard located in the heart of Herefordshire just to let him know that the Shoreham gig would be at 8:30 instead of 8 p.m? This could have been a fucking phone call. Ah, well, better try to relax. Let's turn on the radio. Good evening, it's Halloween, and you're listening to Late Nights on BBC Herefordshire. And coming up next is the hit on everyone's lips. It's been the sensation of the nation, breaking all sorts of records as it now sits at number one for 85 consecutive weeks. I don't even need to tell you its name. Let's just listen to it again, shall we? Hello, John, got a new moat. Hello, John, got a new moat. Got three lungs and a Bible. Got three lungs and a Bible. Alexei, we zoom in on your face. This is you. It's sometime in the mid-80s. How you feeling? What are you wearing? What are you looking like?
I think I'd be playing a bigger gig than Shoreham if I'd been number one for 85 weeks. Lovely venue that it is. What would I be wearing in the... I think it's probably before I sort of got into the 90s. I got into Armani when they opened the Armani. And I was thin at that point, thinnish. I was able to fit into, but before then, when they opened Emporio Armani, I was a big customer of them. me and Alan Yentop, the late Alan Yentop, in our deconstructed suits. Before then, I don't know really. I had a tailor, actually. I did have a tailor, so I might
really
have had to do it on. Yeah, Sherlock Hart, he was called. And he was a very good tailor. I realized the reason I started going to Emporio Armani, because I realized even if you tell a tailor, you know, ask a tailor to make you a suit, so your ideas are less good than Giorgio Armani. So, you know, I just got this guy to make me a lot of really quite banal suits. But let's say I would be wearing a suit in, Prince of Wales Czech. And a three-button top, us polo shirt, and shoes from where I get my hair cut now is beneath John Rushton's shoes in... I think it's in Wimpole Street. This is going to lose us. I mean, I don't know which is going to lose us. More listeners. Is this stupid storyline or this what you've asked me? But as soon as you asked,
hey, you haven't heard the storyline yet. The storyline hasn't started.
My shoes would have come from John Rushton in where was he? He was in Brewer Street then.
Yeah, we get a nice close-up shot of your foot pushing down on the pedal as you change into sixth gear.
You've got some automatic stuff. It's a P5B, just to correct you, it's P5B, and it had a 3-speed Borg Warner automatic gearbox.
You do have some like belongings with you, some like a day bag or something. What would you normally carry your stuff around? A backpack or a little briefcase or what?
I think I just put that stuff in my pocket so that they bulged unattractively. I never one for a handbag or a briefcase or Angus Deaton was an early adopter of the sort of European man bag, I remember.
Mm. What do they call it, a valise or?
No, it was just a sort of handbag, but for men. Looked like a kind of washing bag or something. If you fly business class on Emirates, they give you like a free meal.
Right. So what we're doing here, listeners, is we're playing like a D&D with Alexis Sale. All right.
I would like have switched off by now. Yeah.
We're not playing with the full 5e rules. D&D, I'm not going to make him roll 100 million dice. Kind of simplifying the rules of D&D, okay. But we're going to do a bit of role play with Alexi here.
Okay.
Hello, John Guttenumo. Ah! Hello, John Guttenumo. The car starts sputtering. The lights flicker and then turn off as you roll to a gentle stop. Surrounded by darkness and dense forest. Was that a distant howling you heard? Surely not. Alexi. You're alone and lost. Well, maybe not lost. You might know where you are, but you're in the middle of the deepest woods, darkest woods in your Vauxhall 9F5.
Rover P5B coupe,
what do you do?
Because is this before mobile phones? What year is this?
This is in the 80s, 1980.
Yeah, I might have had a mobile phone, which I'd just ring up and help.
No, you don't.
I don't have a mobile
phone.
No,
I rolled a dice and you don't have one. It's the 80s.
Right, so the car's run out of, I guess I'd get out. You'd have to get out and walk, wouldn't you? I mean, it's something that did happen with the Rover, so it's not an entirely unfamiliar experience.
Mm-hmm.
Get out and walk either to a habitation, you know, that you'd passed or...
Okay.
Forward if you knew. Actually, I'd have a map because in those days we used to carry a road map. So I would have consult the road map to see where the nearest habitation is.
The car is completely dead, so the lights aren't working, but it is a bright full moon. So you grab your map and the loose stuff that might have fallen out your pocket, you'd stuff it back in your pockets of your suit and you step out. When you step out of the Rover 226 or whatever, you hear the footsteps approaching. You hear footsteps approaching. As they get closer, the light of the full moon reveals the silhouette of a man in a long coat, dress shoes, and a fedora. He seems to be compensating for something. He's He's 4 foot 9 inches tall.
Oh, no.
You're right, mate. You seem more stuck than a bachelor's favourite magazine, if you know what I mean. Not me, of course. I'm normally swatting away the birds like a Pegasus's tail. I'm Mike, by the way. Ooh, is that a Rover T1000 or whatever? Lovely bit of kit, that.
P5 coupe.
Only one thing gets that moving again. A push start from a hippie. Lucky for you, I got just the thing. Mike turns to the camera with a wink and whistles in a really cool way. And out of the bushes appears a gangly, grey-clad hippie and starts walking towards you. And he says, "Man plants the seed, God grows the seed, then man eats the seed. But, like, in this instance, man, I'm man and, like... you're the seed, man." The hippie opens his mouth wide to reveal two enormous fangs before lunging for you. What do you do, Alexi?
Oh, Christ.
What?
Nothing. Just, you know. Well, in real life, or do I consult? Detailed the last series of sandwich. Well, this was when I'd still carry, you know, I was still carrying a knife, and so I'd stab Nigel with a knife. It's something I've often wanted to do anyway.
It's Neil, not Nigel.
No, okay. Nigel would insist they are one and the same.
Okay, you're gonna attack Neil/Nigel with a knife, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, amazing. I've got a 20-sided die here. I'm gonna roll. To attack, okay? I'm going to say you have to beat a 13 to hit him. Okay. Otherwise, he's gonna dodge it or something. But you get to add 4 to your knife attack. So here we go. I'm rolling the dice. You rolled a 19 plus 4, 23. Okay, you lunge at Neil and you stab him with this knife.
All right.
And he shrieks a massive shriek, okay? And you've done some real damage to him. He's nearly dead, but he's not giving up. He's going to try and bite you still. He's coming at you for your lifeblood. He's going to roll to hit you. He rolled a 7, Alexei. How do you deflect or dodge, or what do you do to evade this coming bite attack?
I don't know. Sideways step.
Sideways step. And I assume you go for another stab as you dodge.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's roll to attack this one. Okay, that's a 10 plus 3, 13. 13 is what you needed to beat him. You strike a killing blow at Neil the vampire.
This is what you spend evenings doing, isn't it, with your friends?
Quite often, yes.
Good. No, that's good for you. Well done. Good for you.
Oh, you don't know what's in store yet. You'll see. Okay, as soon as you strike the killing blow on Neil.
We can't do this for our podcast, can we? Are you envisioning this goes on for the whole podcast?
Yeah, we've got 50 more minutes. You strike the killing blow.
I don't believe in Halloween myself. I see it as an American import. You know, it's another aspect of consumer capitalism, really. So I don't. Anyway, carry on. Go on.
Some of the greatest horror writers are British, and they did it before, you know.
It's
nothing to do with Halloween. They're still doing horror. And this is just, it's autumn. The leaves are falling. The nights are darker and longer. So it's a good time for spooky shit, whether it's Halloween or not.
This isn't our Halloween special, then.
What should we just call it? The Alexei Horror Special? You just...
I don't mind, you know. I mean, I don't mind calling it a Halloween special. I just want to emphasize my disagreements with my ideological disagreements with Halloween.
Okay, that's fair.
So
this is going really well.
Yeah.
As soon as you strike the killing blow on Neil, he lets out an ear-splitting shriek, and he crumbles into a pile of dust. Okay, and you think maybe. Maybe you see the fluttering of leathery wings in the night around you, but for a moment, there is still. And in that moment,
I think there's a lot more to me, the way as well, and the young ones, and I'll let John got a new motor. Why are you locating it in my past? What, you know? Rather than, anyway, go on. To say there's more to me than this, listeners.
It's mainly because I wanted the car to be in it, mainly.
P5B coupe. Well, get fucking right then what it is. It was a very nice gig in Bristol on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a Halloween gig, wasn't it?
Was it? It might have been advertised as that. I didn't explain my ideological objections to them. It was very nice. It was very exciting. But if if anybody's listening, I left my scarf there, which is a nice green kefir that Lisa bought me in Morocco. So if anybody's, I left it in the sort of dressing room area underneath a
my friend is was working up there. I'll ask him if they can recover it for you. Can you move your phone away from your mic, please? It's creating a buzzing. Thank you.
Okay. Very nice.
Back into the scene. In that moment, Neil crumbles into dust and Mike falls to his knees, grabbing his head. All right? Looks like it's agony, but actually you see it might be relief. Yeah? He says, thank you, Jertsy. I mean, Alexei, you've released me from that wicked vampire's spell. You see, I'm actually a vampire hunter who's been enthralled by Neil for many years, and I've been forced to find him prey like yourself against my wishes. But now I can finally die in peace or just run away or something, depending
on...
Does
this replicate... This is what you do, the sort of Dungeons yeah, and Dragons.
Yeah, but I'm rarely the dungeon master. I'm normally one of the players.
It's just the level of storytelling, is it, that you...
This was a bit unnecessary, all this exposition, because this doesn't come back again at all.
Great. So you've wasted... I mean, the few people who've... stuck with this, you wasted their time even more.
But I can finally die in peace, like a hairdresser in Iceland, you know, because hairdressers dye hair and Iceland is historically peaceful. He scrawls something on a bit of paper and hands it to you. He goes, here, there's a place not too far. Actually, you've got a map in your hand. He points at the map. There's a place not too far where you can make a phone call. Godspeed, Alexei.
Maybe a phone box in those days, wouldn't there?
He points at your map and you see that there is a nearby castle and it's called Castle Definitely Not Spooky. All right. And he falls and he passes out on the floor.
Okay.
What do you do?
I'd rather find a phone box, really. Why can't I just find a village? And then in those days, a village would have a phone box.
So there is a village, but it is past the castle. There is a hill with a castle on top. And on the other side of that hill is a village. And then you're surrounded by like woods for miles and miles in every other direction. Okay.
All right. I'll go to the castle then. Yeah.
All right. You're walking through the woods, you go to the castle. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to...
In your John Rushton shoes from Brewer Street.
Mm-hmm. So what, you're carefully staying on the road so that as not to get them muddy?
No, sturdy shoes.
Okay.
I was in a screen too called Night Voice. It's one of the better things I did.
Yeah, people like that.
Yeah, I had... the shoes I had were sort of crackle leather from John. I think they were John Rushton. Anyway, so I liked the shoes, so I kept them.
They let you keep them?
I don't know if they did, but I bought an identical pair.
You go to the castle. All right, you approach the castle, panting a bit because there's a big uphill climb, and then you approach and you look up to see its cracked tower and way too many gargoyles. Flickering lights glow from within the many windows, and poison ivy scrambles up the deteriorating brickwork. Large wooden doors.
I don't think we have poison ivy in this country, but.
Large wooden doors face you with a dangling chain beside the doors, with like a handle at the bottom of the chain.
I pull the chain then.
Ding dong. The doors creak open and a butler greets you with a wide, rotten grin. Ah, Alexei Sale, we've been expecting you. Please enter. And he leads you in to a large foyer. Foyer or foyer? Foyer, right?
You could say foyer. Foyer, I don't know.
Foyer.
There's this, you know, I often... people who speak Spanish, probably the phrase I often say in my mind is mata me ahora, kill me now.
What does that mean?
Kill me now.
You're in this large foyer and there's a huge chandelier, you know, two grand stone staircases leading in to your left and to your right. And there's another set of big double doors. Yeah. God, your phone is buzzing, buzzing, buzzing into the mic.
It's quite a way away. I'm just charged. Well, it's charged, so. Is that any better?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. My name is Butler, played by Stephen Fry. Well, you are positively...
it's worse. Yeah, go on.
Positively drenched. Oh, yeah, it's been raining this whole time. You must be freezing. Please. warm yourself by the fire while I fetch you some dry clothes and hot tea. Feel free to use the telephone, of course. They're both just through there. He gestures towards the double doors, and he bows, and he leaves through a small side door. All right, what do you do, Alexei?
Well, I've no reason to. I mean, at this point, I don't know that Stephen Fry had many reasons to hate me. He has more now. So why wouldn't I just go and use the phone?
Right, great. You enter the parlor, all right? The doors open and you hear, surprise! There's a large group of people in there and they cheer and they raise their glasses. And there's a big banner that unfurls from the ceiling. It says, welcome, Alexis Sale, to your party. And
so they've gone to trouble. Like I didn't have a manager, but they've arranged for this pointless meeting with me and my manager. And then they sabotaged my car near this castle.
Maybe, yeah.
In order to just have to hold this party. It seems
what?
Unnecessarily baroque of my friends, but. Okay, I'll go with it.
Surprise! Yeah, and this group of people all cheering. Some poppers go off, yeah? And a young Jeremy Corbyn approaches you with two people called Mr. and Mrs. Sultana. They step forward and they welcome you. Yeah, and Corbyn reaches out and gives you a gift of homemade jam. And he says, welcome, Alexi. This is your party. Welcome to your party. We only threw this party.
You know, I'm never letting you do this ever again.
We only threw this party for you. In about 40 years, we're going to invite everyone else, but it all starts here with you, Alexi, because this is your party, Alexi. Welcome. And people are shoving drinks in your hands, patting you on the back, and everyone kind of has this like glazed look in their eyes. And everyone's like, welcome to your party, Alexis. Welcome to your party, Alexis. Welcome, Alexis. And you're surrounded by this, you know, group of people and celebrations. And you can hear music playing and the music's like, hello, John got a new moat. Ah! Hello, John got a new moat. Ah! You know, in 40 years, I'll have a podcast. In 40 years, I'll have a podcast. What do you do, Alexi?
Well, apart from kill myself,
so you can remember, you can like talk to people, you can ask people questions, you can like examine things or examine your surroundings, you can interact with objects, you can go anywhere you like. So it's your playground to play in.
Right. Or can I leave?
Yeah. Everyone's kind of like got this glazed look in their eyes and they watch you as you slowly back out of the room. And this party like is kicking off. And it was like, Alexi, where are you going? And you slowly just kind of close the doors until the noises are just like muffled behind these big wooden doors. Now you're in the foyer. There's two staircases.
Where's the phone? Have I used the phone yet?
The phone was in the parlor. You've just left the parlor.
Oh, can I go back in and use the phone then?
Okay, cool. You take a moment to gather yourself, take a deep breath, and go back into the party. And they all go, surprise! Surprise! And Jeremy Corbyn comes up to you, gives you a jar of jam. Welcome to your party, Alexis L. In 40 years, we're going to invite everyone else. But for now, this is your party. Welcome.
Yeah, so I'm just using the phone, thanks.
Oh, you need the telephone. Of course, Alexi. Yeah. Come, follow me. And he guides you through the parlor, through the people. He's like, mind out, the VIP needs a telephone. And he pushes everyone to the side and he leads you to the fireplace on the back side of the parlor. He goes, to use the phone, Alexi, all you have to do is run as fast as you can through the fireplace. And it's like a big fireplace. It's not like a small, you know, suburban. This is a mansion, huge fireplace. And he's like, you have to trust the party, Alexi. You have to trust me, and just if you run full pelt into that fireplace, I promise you, you will emerge in the other side where there is a telephone that you can use.
I know the 80s were a long time ago, but you didn't have to run through a fireplace just to use a phone. It was a lot simpler.
Yeah, there's something weird about it, but do you want to roll an insight
check? I'll run through the fireplace.
You're going to run through it? Okay, you have your faith in Jeremy. You run full pelt into the fireplace. And as you're approaching the fire, you kind of close your eyes and shield them, but you kind of feel this whoosh. And then suddenly the sound has gone and the air is now like quite cold. and you open your eyes and you find yourself in this stone room.
Nobody's going to be listening to this by now. Go on.
And you find yourself in this stone cold room with a stone slab in the middle. And there's like a candles placed strategically around the room, maybe in some sort of like pentagram shape or something.
Thinking of getting my flu jab today.
And then you hear this.
That'll be a high spot.
You
on my day.
There's the smell of like incense and sage in the air. You turn back to look behind you, and the fireplace is kind of just more of a fire pit now, with like this cauldron hanging above it and this weird green bubbling liquid in there. And you
did
see
Jeremy lie to me then.
Comes through behind you, comes out of the fire, walks out and joins you in this room. And he explains, Alexei, we are planning to change this country for the better, to bring justice and peace and social equality to our country. But we need you first, yeah? We need your help and your sacrifice. And he gestures towards the stone slab and these three
That wasn't what I agreed to.
Of course, Alexei. You have to help us first, and then, of course, you can use the phone, but we just need your help first, dear Alexei.
That's not our agreement.
I understand that, Alexei, but you see, you have to behave for the many, not for the you. You know, you need to sacrifice in order for the betterment of everyone's life.
If I, like, go along with this, will it end sooner? Is there a way to make it end, like, sooner?
It's a possibility. It's a very stark possibility, of course. He gestures over to the stone slab, and there's three hooded figures stood around it, and they turn over, and you see these you can say is witches, you know, big warty noses, big pointy chins, yeah, and you see these three witches played by French and Saunders and
Ruby Wax.
I was struggling to think of a third. They speak, they agree with Jeremy. They say, yes, we have had a warning from the future. They do a witch voice. Ah, Alexei, we've had a warning from the future. This party depends on your sacrifice. You see, your party is hopeful. Your party is great, but there'll be a blunder and it'll all be too late. But there is hope to get it back on its feet. If on this fateful night, our ritual is complete. You see, there's only one thing that unites us, Alexei Sale. It's not class or ideology, color, creed, or roots. The only thing that unites us is you, fat bastard! And they turn and point at you, and Jeremy grabs you by the arms and starts pushing you towards the stone slab. Yeah? He says, the witches require your blood, Alexei. I'm sorry about this. To unite the people, for you are the chosen one. You represent the workers and the bourgeois, the peaceful and the warriors, the ignorant and the intelligent. Yours is the only soul that can adapt to all these communities and lead them to a united future. But first, these witches just have to drain all of your blood in a really excruciating manner and place a drop of it into each pot noodle across the land. And he shoves you onto this slab. What do you do? What do you want to do? You've got these three witches.
You know, a lot of people sort of depend on this podcast for their mental, you know, it keeps them going, really. Are you happy putting them through this?
It's Halloween. It's a fun story.
They can have a week off. What do I do? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let French and Saunders and Ruby Wax, I can't believe I'm getting drawn into this, but I mean, I'm not going to let French and Saunders and Ruby Wax drain my blood, am I really?
Probably smart, yeah.
So I resist.
Okay. If you see on your character sheet there, I gave you a quarter staff.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We've established you have a knife as well.
Yeah.
You've got these people around you. What are you going to do to resist? You have to describe what you're going to do.
Bash their brains out with me stuff.
Okay, amazing. All right, sick. All right, I'm going to roll two dice. You're going to do it because you're going to do a double attack.
Who invented all this? I mean, does it have a history? It's kind of,
yeah, this a guy called Gygax.
Gygax,
I think Gygax. That's his name, yeah, back in the 70s. And
yeah,
changed a lot of people's lives forever. A lot of lonely nerds who didn't have confidence or friends found, you know, community in getting together and creating these fantasy worlds loosely based on the works of J.R.R. Tolkien.
Well, how did he proselytize? I mean, how did he spread the word?
He published a book called the Dungeon Master's Guide and the Player's Handbook and the Monster Manual. So three books, and people could buy these books and learn the rules of the games. And there was like a character sheet on the back page that you could copy and make
and
up your
characters.
And then
people started meeting IRL and playing.
This was, yeah, games. Exactly. Yeah, before the digital revolution, the people would meet in real life and actually play games together in a room, right, in a shared space, normally in a garage or a basement or something. And
their mother's basement where they all live.
Yeah. And the game has evolved over the years.
Are there conventions now?
There are huge conventions.
I feel like Scheherazade, just asking questions.
There doesn't even need to be, they don't even, and now it's gone beyond, you know, having to be set in the fantasy kind of Lord of the Rings kind of world. As you can see, you can just set it in the real world. You can create horror worlds. There's like sci-fi versions of it. And it's really cool way for people to be creative and tell stories together. And people get really attached to their characters as well. I have about three characters that I'm playing at the moment in various games. And it's a very popular IP. You know, did you see the Dungeons and Dragons movie that came out a couple of years ago?
Sadly, I didn't know. Tell me about
it. It's really good. It's just a cool fantasy story, but it's surprisingly good. Yeah,
it just takes the Dungeons and Dragons IP,
yeah,
intellectual property.
Yeah,
and who was in it?
Chris Pine.
Oh yeah, one of the Chris's, one of the many Chris's.
That lady from Fast and the Furious, the really cool Latina lady, Gonzalez, and this like British boy who's from some British sci-fi show. It's a cool story.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of cool stories, you lash out with your quarterstaff and you strike two of the witches in front of you, and you hit one of them. You hit one of them pretty damn hard, okay? And she's like knocked out on the floor, okay? For every time you get an action, they're going to get an action. So you've knocked out one of the witches, okay? Let's say it was Saunders, okay? She's sprawled out on the floor. Okay. Jeremy now hardens his grip on your shoulders and shoves you over to this stone slab, and you see some chains and handcuffs. They want to strap you to this thing. Okay, so Jeremy's going to do a strength check with this yellow die, and you're going to roll a contested strength check with this black die, and we're going to see who's stronger. Okay, you fucking smash him. Jeremy's not a big guy. He's very brawny.
He's wiry.
And you like shrug him off with your shoulder, and he gets pushed back. So now it's your turn to attack again. All right. You're going to attack with your quarterstaff again. Let's see how many people you knock out. Again, you just hit one person. Let's say it's Jeremy, because he's been pissed grabbing you and that. So you turn around. You try to hit one of the witches. She does like a matrix backwards leaning dodge, but then you spin and knock Jeremy clean out. His trifocals go flying across the room. And you are left with two witches.
So how can these things end? It seems like it's going on.
This story has an ending. Don't worry.
It does have an ending.
Okay? I've
right.
written something called a one shot. Normally when you play D&D, you play a campaign, which is an ongoing saga that goes for. Some people have played the same campaign for like 40 years with their same group of friends. This is called a one shot. It's got a beginning, middle, and an end.
Well, we could get to the end faster if I just cooperate.
Yeah. That's a big part of it.
Hostage.
The witch misses you. She comes at you with a claw attack and tries to scratch you in the face, but she misses. The other witch comes at you too. She rolled a 3 as well. She misses too. They're not very deft. So I'm assuming you're going to attack again with your quarterstaff.
Yeah.
Let's hope both die. Roll.
Yeah.
Let's hope
both
die.
That's what I'm going to do, yeah.
Do you want to describe a cool move you're going to do?
No, not really.
Okay. Again, only one hits. Okay. Ruby Wax goes flying across the room. You do this crotch strike and send a launcher up into the air. And it's just you and Dawn French now. She's going to come at you with her claws. She rolls a nat 20, Alexi. That's pretty bad. She rolled a 20.
Yes, in every possible way, yes.
On a 20-sided die, she rolled a 20. That's a pretty... She's going to get double damage on this attack, okay?
If I just died, if I just killed myself, would that end the game?
That's true, yeah. But you wouldn't do that. You don't want to be defeated. You want to win, don't you? Don't you have a competitive spirit?
I do, but it's hanging on by a thread at the moment.
Dawn French claws at your face. Takes 7 damage of your 21 health, yeah? Bringing you down to, what, 14 health, okay? And you get these 3 claw marks across your face, yeah? And you're bleeding out from your face. I bet you're really pissed off now.
Yeah.
Okay, you try and strike at her, and you get... You do the... you roll what you needed to hit Dawn French, okay? Tell me, she's the last person standing. How do you take her out? What's this? What's the move? It's not Dawn French. It's a witch played by Dawn French.
Oh, you know, stuff. Poke in the head.
With a simple poke in the head, you knock her out, okay? And that's it. You are...
Because people are... Yeah, it's not like... Yeah, there's so many things happening in the world at the moment. People are yearning to hear what I say. It's not like...
It's called escapism. It's just one episode. We're trying it out. You're going to see how much people love listening to this shit. Have some fucking enthusiasm. I'm going to post on the Patreon, yeah? I'm going to show everyone all the work I've done on this, all right? I'm going to post the flow chart I made.
People want to know what I think.
I'm
going to
show the, send all the writing I did, and pages of writing. I'm going to post that all up onto the Patreon.
If only it's seen
the
me
last
through
image
week.
Is just going to be your face.
I can
face.
Hear what Alexi thought about Trump and Xi Jinping. See me through another week, but sadly I didn't get to. Anyway, carry on. Go on.
What do you want to say about that?
Nothing really. Well, I don't know. I'm stuck.
You're alone now in this ritual room. Okay. You've got that fireplace behind you, but you know that through there is a large group of people who won't be very happy to see you still walking around. Do you want to examine the room and see if there's another way out?
Yeah.
Okay. You notice in the back corner of the room, there's a bit of light bleeding through what seems to be like a crack in the wall. But it's like a very straight line with light kind of shining through it.
It's just like, it reminds me of like a really upsetting dream, this. But I didn't get carried on.
You know? Yeah. What do you do?
But there's a crack of light.
Yeah, on the
I go towards it and use my staff to prise open the owl, which gets me out of the building.
Amazing. You find that there's this like square of stone that just kind of really smoothly glides to the right as you prise it with your staff. And you have to lower your head to go through this gap. And you notice that it was a hidden doorway behind a bookshelf.
I bet it was.
Behind a bookshelf on the other side, and you find yourself in an upstairs hallway in this mansion. Okay. You walk down the hall towards a strange door at the back. No, that doesn't make sense. You go down some stairs first and then you find a strange door. There's a door and it says garage above the door. Okay, and it's locked by some strange mechanism. There is a plaque beside the door, and it reads, "This door can only be opened by fire, phonetically speaking." What do you do?
Can only be opened by fire, phonetically speaking. What does that mean?
This door can only be opened by fire, phonetically speaking.
I don't know.
This in D&D is what we call a puzzle. It's the only puzzle in the game.
I hate puzzles.
It's the only puzzle in the game. And I'll tell you this, it leads you to the ending.
Oh, Christ, well, I'm motivated now, but I'm not very good at puzzles.
The only thing that will motivate you in D&D is that it will finish.
Yeah.
You can do stuff to help you. Do you want to, like, examine closer the door and the mechanism?
Well, I'd like to know what the how can I find out what the puzzle is or how?
Okay, do you want to do a wisdom roll?
Phonetically, fight them.
I'll do a wisdom roll for you, okay?
Yeah.
And I'll give you a clue if you roll high enough. Oh, God, you rolled an 18. Okay, really good.
Okay.
So this door can only be opened by fire, phonetically speaking. Phonetically speaking seems to really stand out to you. Phonetically speaking. What happens when you speak phonetically? This is like...
You just say words.
Yeah, but isn't there a phonetic way of
speaking? My mind's gone, but I think this game's given me Alzheimer's. I've lost the language.
Of all the things you've said, that one hurt. That is not what a creator wants to hear when someone is playing their game.
Phonetic. What's phonetic? I've forgotten what phonetically means.
And then phonetic. You think of that word, phonetic. What normally follows that word?
Pronunciation.
What else? Really, what you need, you really needed the AA or the RAC for your Rover 390. But now you're thinking you probably would rather get the police over here or the fucking army. Right? Phonetic. Yeah. Phonetic. Police. Army. Phonetic. If you were to describe to the police the number plate of your car, how would you read it out to them?
Like BMT527H.
No. They don't understand that over the phone. That's not how they say letters on the phone, is it?
Oh, God almighty, this took long. The United Nations phonetic alphabet.
This door can only be opened by fire, phonetically speaking.
India, Romeo, Echo.
Creak, 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 rattle, 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 clink, clink, clank, clink. The mechanism starts whirring to life and the door slides open. You step forward into a vast garage, yeah? And the garage door slides up and opens, revealing the woods and a road out ahead. And the lights come on in the garage, vroom, 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 and it reveals a huge tank in the middle of the garage, a tank of your choice, whatever the hell you want it to be. And then next to the tank, there is, you know, a set of keys, a helmet, some goggles, and a cool leather jacket. This could be your way out. What tank is it, Lex? You get to describe a tank.
Oh, a Centurion, a British Centurion.
I really thought that would perk you up.
Too far gone for British Centurion. The greatest, best tank of the 1950s, really, post-war period.
Amazing. You climb up onto it and open the hatch, I presume, and climb in to the tank.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tank. It's hatches.
You try the keys out and the tank comes alive and it purrs to life. You drive it out of the garage. Okay? You're at the top of this hill, and at the crest of the hill, you see a road leading down to the nearest village, as I described earlier. You turn the turret round one last time to view the castle. And you hear a voice in the air. You'll be back, Alexei Sale. Just you wait and see.
Linda's going to be really angry with you for putting me through this.
Why?
Anyway, go on.
Why would Linda care?
She cares about what? If somebody's upsetting her, Alexei, and giving him Alzheimer's.
All right, well, you're looking at the castle.
Yeah.
You've got the road down to the village. You're in a big fuck-off tank. You can see that the petrol's full. It's got ballistics in there. Whatever it shoots, it's full. What do you want to do? Do you want to do anything before you head to the village?
No, I just want to get there.
You don't want to shoot. Okay, you could have shot at the castle. Forget it. No.
I mean, they're left them behind.
You turn around and you drive down the hill.
Those people are out of my life.
You're driving down the hill towards the village. And as you're driving down, big grin on your face, Alexis Sale saved the day, survived this castle of maniacs.
Yeah.
You start to hear a weird hissing. Hissing. And you look up at the vent to see a green gas filling the cockpit. And Alexi, you gasp and splutter as you try to open
but the Centurion hatch. Had MBC protection, nuclear, biological, chemical protection, so it wouldn't.
It's weird. It must have been rigged up as a trap. And you try to open the hatch, but it seems to be sealed shut. And you try to stay awake, but you just can't keep your eyes. You wake up on the concrete slab in the ritual room. The three cackling witches lean over you, holding a jagged dagger.
Come on.
And Jeremy leans over you too. See, Alexi, told you you'd be back. Your party needs you and your sweet, sweet blood. For the many, we kill the few. The end. Hard cut to credits. The credits roll. And then there's a post-credit scene of like, we didn't get to it, but there's a zombie Rick and Vivian, who's just Vivian, who's scary enough. They're running around the castle getting up to mischief. There was a bunch of stuff you didn't get to, you didn't see. And you see a cutaway of them like having a fight in the corridors. And the end. Stupid Noises Productions.
Thank you for that, Talal.
An Alexis Sale Halloween special.
Yeah.
Woo. Well done.
Are we just going to leave it there then? Are we not going to...
Oh, what? What's that? You...
No.
Oh.
No, we'll leave our analysis of the Trump, Xi Jinping, and the collapse of the ceasefire in Gaza and Palestine action, and we'll leave that all for another week, shall we? What else is? I suppose Liverpool's defeat last night to Crystal Palace in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
Well, no, we won't talk about any of that. We won't. We'll just leave it there.
Hey, man, it's a fucked up world out there, and I hope we've given a bit of escapism, a bit of a release with this. I hope you enjoyed this at home, this experiment. Please go to patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. You can watch full video episodes, and you can watch Alexi's face while I'm reading my hard work. You can also watch Alexi, Lisa, and Nigel watch The Young Ones. And I'm going to put all the fucking... what do I call this? All the writing and the flow chart and the character sheets. I'm going to pop all that on the Patreon as well, so you can all see.
Fantastic.
That. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. Happy another example of American imperialism, everybody.
Trick or treat.
When's Black Friday?
Smell my feet. Give me something good to eat. Black Friday's at the end of November. Come on, Alexi, you're saying you didn't enjoy that at all?
Hang on, what'd you say, Linda?
And bloody stupid Halloween.
I know, I said that already. You said bloody stupid Halloween. Bloody stupid Halloween.
Come on, is there not anything you liked about that game?
The dramatic tension there.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. Not a lot in there that I liked, really. I don't want to demotivate you. I mean, very.
Oh,
very
I don't important. Care. You know, different strokes for different folks, isn't it? Well, I'm sorry and you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was good. It makes you an excellent episode. We see might be a tremendous uptick in listeners.
And if it was
that 9% of our 10 million viewers of the videos in the Philippines, might connect with them profoundly. And if there's a tremendous uptick.
If it ends up being our most popular episode, would you
consider
doing more?
I'd have to, wouldn't I?
Become a D&D podcast?
This is a democracy. Well, yeah, if this turned out to be our most popular episode. It's like the bloody myth of Sisyphus. It's a man, so angered the gods that he endlessly had to play Dungeons and Dragons. This is fitting punishment.
Well, there you go. I broke your Dungeons and Dragons cherry, and I'm very honored to have done so. Watch, you'll call me in a few days going, I really actually tell, I can't stop thinking about it.
Well, that's true, but no.
So I left it on a cliffhanger, so, you know, next Halloween.
Right.
You never know. We'll see how this goes down. I was very nervous about doing this.
Well, I think I helped.
Yes.
I helped. Should we say bye-bye then?
Please.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.